I'm a great. I'm a grateful alcoholic. My name is George. We're on tradition 5, but before we get there, we're going to do a little bit of review on tradition 4 this week. And then I'm going to after that, I'm going to try and review all 4 of them, because 5, all 4 lead to 5. Each tradition builds on the one preceding it, just like each step builds on the step before it. Tradition 4 in its long form. With respect to its own affairs, each AA group should be responsible to no other authority than its own conscience. But when the plans concern the welfare of neighboring groups also, those groups ought to be consulted, and no group, regional committee, or individual should ever take action that might greatly affect AA as a whole without conferring with the trustees of the General Service Board on such issues of our common welfare is paramount. In the 12 steps, the 12 traditions illustrated, I want to read something about the fourth tradition, because the fourth tradition gives each group the right to be self-governing, to do what it needs to as its own group, with its own flavor, with its own personality, and it also gives that group the right to be wrong. And a lot of groups practice a lot of the right to be wrong, and if they practice it long enough, they no longer exist. We'll talk more about that in 5. As a member who does any amount of traveling finds the AA spirit the same everywhere, but apart from this inward kinship, there is vast differences among groups. Hence, the traveler finds 3 members discussing the steps in somebody's living room over there, 300 listening to speakers in a church auditorium in one part of the U.S. Respectful silence greets a speaker who begins, "My name is Ann, and I'm an alcoholic," and another, everybody happily shouts out, "Hi, Ann," and in many other places, she has introduced herself with her full name. At a 1-hour meeting or a 90-minute meeting in each neighborhood, in each part of the world, reached by AA, the local group is free to work out its own customs. And that's the fourth tradition, is about each group's own individual customs. As always, freedom brings responsibility. Because each group is autonomous, it's up to each group to avoid any action that might harm AA. There have been such actions, or this tradition would not be necessary. Implicit throughout AA's traditions, Bill wrote, "It is the confession that our fellowship has its sins. We admit that we have character defects as a society, and that these defects threaten us constantly. Blown up into multiple size, the big ego may inspire one group to take over all public information work for the area without consulting any other group or other local groups. Once the group has decided we have all the answers, the lid's off. The group may then decide that, let's say, the 11th tradition is good and is an outdated technology. This is a competitive age. We're going to come right out and give AA some good, vigorous promotion. To the general public, this one conscious group is AA's antics reflect not only on the ignored neighboring groups, but on the entire fellowship. So we don't promote in that aspect. We promote by what we do in here. That's how we promote. We don't go outside and beat the band to show everybody how good we're doing. And to try and draw people into AA, it won't work. We've tried that already. In a way, the fourth tradition is like the fourth step. It suggests that an AA group ought to take honest inventory of itself, asking about each of its independently planned actions. Would this break any tradition? Like the individual member who chooses to make the steps his or her guide towards happy sobriety, the wise group recognizes traditions and are not hindering technicalities. They are proved guides toward the chief objective of all AA groups, and that's sobriety for the person walking in the door, and sobriety to last for those who stay here. There's a great little book. It talks about the different little things, and it shows those little illustrations. The questions that come out of the fourth tradition in the worksheet that is given out, the traditions worksheet, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. These are some questions you can ask yourself. In relationships, in your relationship with the group, in your relationship with others. Do I insist that there be only a few right ways of doing things in AA? That's a good one for us. That's the old bleeding deacon. Do it this way or else go out and die. If you don't do this, you're going to get drunk. Nobody knows that. No one has that answer. Some people don't have to do anything and stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I may not want their sobriety personally, but they can stay sober that way. Does my group always consider the welfare of the rest of AA or nearby groups of loners in Alaska or internationalists miles from a port or a group in Rome or in El Salvador? Do we take that into consideration when we make a decision on what we're going to do as a group or in a group? Do I put down other members' behavior when it's different from mine what I've learned from it? Do I always bear in mind that to those outsiders who know I'm in AA, I may, to some extent, represent our entire beloved fellowship? One of the first things I heard when I walked in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you may be the only example of the big book, so you better behave that way. And that's real important. You know, as a group member, I have a responsibility to carry that not only in my group meeting, but outside in my relationships, in my relationships at work, in my relationships with others. Am I willing to help newcomers go to any length, his length, not mine, to stay sober? It's a little different than, you know, better do this or that. You know, if somebody called me and there's somebody in this room that we've done 12-step calls with, where we got up in the middle of the night and sat in the parking lot to chase someone around who wanted to go get loaded, and we were trying to get them help, and we dropped them off at somebody else's house, and they claimed they had no money and they were going to wash their clothes because they needed their clothes washed. And we went to any lengths to help them find their sobriety, of course. I don't know if that person ever stayed or not, but she went in and out for a while, and there was a lot of people that got involved. But I tell you one thing, it kept all of us sober. And it helped us to keep our sobriety together. But we went to the lengths that they needed, not the ones we told them, well, if you don't show up here, then we're not going to help you. We went to a parking lot at 1 o'clock in the morning and literally chased them around the parking lot because they're having a problem at a mobile station right off of 84 is where that happened. And that's a story I won't forget. And I was with somebody last week before I left to go out of town. And there, we actually had to call the police on them. And I had the pleasure of being the one to sit on them until the cops came. So, you know, that we went to any length to help them find what they needed to find their recovery. So, and this is the fourth tradition we're talking about. So, do I share my knowledge of AA tools with other members who may not have heard of them? I mean, I have a lot of tools that I use that was given to me by some old-timers that are maybe not be what some people use in. I share them, what they do with them or not. I was told I give a message. What other people do with them is none of my business. And that's really that simple. So that's what we can ask ourselves about tradition four. You know, we have a right to be wrong as a group. As individuals, we're going to be wrong because we're human. The steps teach us that in 6 and 7. We get to look at those defects and flaws, and we get to work on them throughout our recovery. We get into this tradition, and we get to the fifth tradition, that each group has but one primary message to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. It always amazed me, and I was talking to somebody about that, it doesn't say it carries AA's message. It carries its message. What is its message? Each group has its own message. That's why we have so many different types of groups, so many different types of meetings, because each group is different. This group carries the message of traditions and steps, concepts and history. That's what they do in this group. That's what they've done since their inception. That's what this group does. Other groups have speaker meetings and they carry the message through other alcoholics. They have big book meetings. There's all different ways to hear how different groups carry the message. So how do we get to this fifth tradition, and what is the messages we carry? As individuals, we carry messages, and as groups, we carry messages. And as individuals, you know, I came into AA, I remember what my sponsor said to me when I got here. He said, there's two kinds of people you're going to meet in Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, yeah, what are they? He said, men and women. Said, that's nice. He says, and what about, and he said, there's two other kinds of people you're going to meet in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, who are they? He says, those people you want to be like and those you don't. And that's what you like. Those are messages that people were carrying. Now, that didn't make sense to me when I got here, but it makes a lot of sense to me as I stay here. There are some people in these rooms that can't give me anything they have. I will listen. I will be polite. I will be considerate because I learned those things through my sponsor and through what I've learned in here. But there are other people who, and it's not about time, who I want everything they have because of their spiritual walk. And it talks about, later on, we'll talk about the spiritual entity of the fifth tradition next week, actually. So the first tradition is about our common welfare and our unity. which is our unity. Our common welfare must come first. There's a living God in the second tradition who says he's in charge. It's really that simple. Third tradition says there's no other requirement except the desire not to drink. That's the only requirement for membership. And the fourth tradition, a group is self-governing through unity and a loving God. So it's reinforcing traditions two and one. And if you have the membership requirement, you have three. So now you got four, and each group has its own flavor. Now we get to five, carrying its message. Does a group carry AA's message of recovery, and that, or as an individual and as a group? There are individuals in the group that come up with these great ideas, and I want to tell a few stories, some old stories. One of the old stories is a guy by the name of David Aronoff. He's out of Texas, who tells the story. There was a young lady who was at a meeting, and before she got to a meeting, there was a young lady. She was young. She got drunk. She had a Corvette. She crashed it into a tree. She ended up having a brain hemorrhage. They sent her to an institution. Her family disowned her, and she was in there. And there was a psychiatrist that came in and suggested that she wasn't really mentally disturbed. That she was an alcoholic, and she started. They said that she should go to AA meetings in the institution. They told her she was never coming out. She was signed in for life, and she started going to these AA meetings in the institution, and some women came in, and she was doing very well, and they spoke to the therapist, and she was taking certain kinds of medication. She was taking barbiturates because she was having certain kinds of seizures, and that was what was prescribed, and she did so well that the AA people were allowed to take her out to outside meetings, and from those outside meetings, eventually, she was able to get out of that institution and started going to this meeting. And in that group, they used to have a card. You signed your name, your date of sobriety, who your sponsor was, and so on down the line. They did that in the old days a lot. And what ended up happening one night, the meeting was an open discussion meeting. It was on medication and sobriety. And this lady heard it, and they told her she wasn't sober. And she went in and rechanged her sobriety date. And she stopped taking that medication that kept her sane and normal from these seizures. And what ended up happening is she had a seizure and died. So opinions in Alcoholics Anonymous can kill. And the fifth tradition, and this was that group's message, that you don't can take medication and be a member of this group. And the person who knew her didn't know what to do. The sponsor called up David Aronoff at the time and said, David, what do we do? He says, I know exactly what we do. He made those four men that were at that meeting that told her to stop taking that medication the pallbearers at her funeral. Now, we got to be careful what message we put out there as individuals and as a group. Now, I tell that story because I want to relate it to a story that happened to me. I was sober for a little while. I used to go to a group called The Bottom Line right up the road. And I was at a meeting, and I came in, and of course, coming out of an institution, I came out of a treatment center, which is an institution, in case anybody doesn't know that. And then they put me on some kind of medication for my depression. And I was at a meeting, and it was a similar kind of thing. And I was taking a medicine, and it was the same kind of meeting. And I didn't know the story that I just told until many years after that. And what ended up happening is some guy said, if you're taking that, you're taking speed, you're not sober. And I wanted to be a good AA, even though I didn't know that at the time, as rebellious and as defiant as I was. I just wanted to be part of. So I stopped taking the medication, and 3 days later, in that same meeting hall, they had to get an ambulance to take me to a hospital because I had a seizure. So we got to be careful. And then, of course, good sponsorship is key in this. And he said to me, when did you become so knowledgeable about medicine, and what made you do that? And I said, well, I was at this meeting, and somebody said such and such, and I wanted to follow the rules to the best of my ability at the time. And he says, well, what does the big book say? I said, I don't know what the big book says. He says, well, why don't you find out what the big book says? I says, where do I look? So I went to the big book, and I will read it because I think it's very important, because there's a lot of meetings that revolve around medications, and we're not doctors. And we'll tell you what AA isn't in a little bit. But in the big book, it's very clear what it tells us. It tells us straight out that now about health. A body badly burned by alcohol does not often recover overnight, nor does twisted thinking or depression vanish in a twinkling. We are convinced that a spiritual mode of living is the most powerful health restorative. We who have recovered from serious drinking Our miracles are mental health, but we have seen remarkable transformation in our bodies. Hardly any one of the crowd shows any mark of dissipation. But this does not mean we disregard human health measures. God has abundantly supplied this world with fine doctors, psychiatrists, and practitioners of various kinds. Do not hesitate to take your health problems to such persons. Most of them give freely of themselves that their fellows may enjoy sound minds and bodies. Try to remember that God wrought miracles among us. We should never belittle the good doctor or psychiatrist. Their services are indispensable in treating the newcomer and following his case afterward. I was seeing a doctor. I just wanted to be a good AA. So I listened to the man who said that, if you're doing that, you're not sober. Now, I was always told it's all about motives, and I'm very grateful that I had the kind of sponsorship I did. And that's real important because I hear lots of messages in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, like a lot of us do, that they say it's okay to do things that it's not healthy for an individual. I don't know what's okay for someone else. I know that there are certain things I was told when I got in here, you know, like if you don't drink, you don't get drunk. That was one of the greatest messages I heard in Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, there's many different messages you can hear in a meeting. There's feelings meetings, which we do. There's all the different kinds of meetings. And I was taught that I've got to be careful what message is sent out there, you know, and how we carry that requirement as a group. But I also have to be careful how I carry that requirement as an individual member. Staying sober must have the top priority. That is our top priority. How do we stay sober? If we fail at that, we can't succeed at anything else. If I'm not sober, well, you know, and any of my sponsors said, well, what are you worrying about what's going to happen with your kids 14 years from now? If you drink, you're not going to see them anyway. What's going to you care about your job? If you're not staying sober, you're not going to see it anyway. So sobriety had to be my first priority. And that's what I learned in my very first meeting. If you don't drink, you don't get drunk. Is that too tough for you? Yes. When I'm new, yes, it's very tough for me because my head's telling me all kinds of other things. And I really couldn't hear that clear of a message when I was new because I was too busy plotting in my own mind how I can get out of here to go get drunk. So it wasn't for the people that loved me and left that door open of that second tradition, that loving God, that grabbed me and said, let's go have coffee and let's stick close to the fellowship. What is that group's message? Each group has its own message, as I said. The fifth tradition reminds us that we should remember our primary purpose, to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. It doesn't say we carry the message to the newcomer, because sometimes the person suffering may be sitting in this room with 25, 30, maybe 35 years. And I want to take a cutaway right at that point and read something. It's not AA approved, but it's one of those things that really caught my attention, and I want to tell a couple of stories and get back to the tradition. And it's called Who's Sitting Next to You. And it's a great little story. And if you think about it and think about what we do in a meeting as individual members and how we affect our group, within our group and outside of our group. And it's called Who's Sitting Next to You. I know who you are. You are X who attends the ABC meeting at XYZ Club. We meet anywhere USA. I saw you the other night at 8 o'clock meeting. I didn't know you. I didn't know how long you've been around, but I know you've been coming around for a while because you spoke to a lot of people who knew you. I wasn't one of them. You didn't know who I am. I wandered into your meeting place alone the other night, a stranger in a strange town. I got a cup of coffee, sat down by myself. You didn't speak to me. Oh, you saw me. You glanced my way, but you didn't recognize me, so you quickly averted your eyes and sought out a familiar face. I sat through the meeting. It was okay, slightly different format, but basically the same kind of meeting that was one I had at home. The topic was gratitude. You and your friends spoke about how much the program means to you. You talked about the camaraderie in your meeting place. You said how much the people there had helped you when you first came through the door, how they extended their hand of friendship to make you feel welcome and asked you to come back. And I wondered where they had gone, those nice people who made the entrance so welcoming to you and so comfortable. You talked about how the newcomer is the lifeblood of the fellowship. I agree, but I didn't say so. In fact, I didn't share it in your meeting. I signed my name in your book that was passed around, but the chairman didn't refer to it. He called on those people in the room he knew. So who am I? You don't know? Because you didn't bother to find out. Although yours was a closed meeting, you didn't even ask if I belonged there. I thought it might have been my first meeting. You could have been in full fear and distrust, knowing that this wouldn't work and if work any better than anything else. I tried and would have left convinced that I was right. I might have been suicidal, grasping that last straw, hoping someone would reach out and pull me from the pit of loathing and self-pity from which, by myself, I could find no escape. I might have been a student with a tape recorder in my pocket, assigned to write a paper on how the program works, someone who shouldn't have been permitted to sit there at all, but could have been directed to an open meeting where I might learn what I needed to know. Or you could have been sent by the courts, waiting to know more, but afraid to ask. It happens that I was none of the above. I was just an ordinary member of the fellowship with a few years in the program who was traveling and was in need of a meeting. My only problem that night is that I'd been alone with my own mind too long. I just needed to touch base with my family of recovery. I know from past experiences that I could have walked into your meeting place smiling, sticking out my hand to the first person I saw and said, "Hi, my name is, and I'm from so-and-so." If I felt like doing that, I probably would have been warmly welcome. You would have asked me if I know old so-and-so from my state, or you might have shared part of your experience that occurred in part of my country. Why didn't I? I was hungry, lonely, and tired. The only thing missing was anger, but there, three out of four is a good place for me to be in. So I sat silent through your meeting, and when it was over, I watched enviously of all who gathered in small groups, talking to one another the same way we did in my hometown. You and some of your friends were planning the meeting after the meeting, a nearby coffee shop. By this time, I had been silent so long to reach out to you. I stopped by the bulletin board, read the notices there, kind of hanging around without being too obvious, hoping you might ask if I wanted to join you, but you didn't. As I walked slowly across the parking lot to my car, which was out of state license plates, you looked my way. Our eyes briefly met. I mustered a smile. Again, you looked away. I buckled my seatbelt. I started my car and drove off to the motel where I was staying. As I lay in my bed waiting to fall asleep, I made a gratitude list. You were on it. Along with your friends in the meeting place, I knew that you were there for me and that I needed you far more than you needed me. I knew that if I needed help and asked for it, you would have gladly given it. But I wondered, what if I hadn't been able to ask? I know who you are. Do you remember me? Anyone, anywhere in the USA? So when we come into a meeting, we got to be careful who's around us. You know, I'm a little teary-eyed because I have a story to tell. I was up in North Carolina. They don't do the meetings the way we do down here. They definitely don't got to learn how to do the meetings a little differently. You know, I still want them to do it my way. And I was sitting there, and the meeting was on carrying the message. And I'm sitting in the room, and there's one guy there that I know well. One of my former sponsees was there, and he was picking up a medallion, and I was there for that. And there was a guy that moved out of here because IBM moved a bunch of years ago, and I knew him when he worked in IBM. So there was two people I knew in that meeting, and I was looking across the way, and this guy's looking at me, and I'm looking at him through the whole meeting. And at the end of the meeting, it was anniversary day, and he got up and he said, "You know, we were talking about carrying the message," and he said, "I came down to Florida 5 years ago today, and at 7 o'clock meeting at a meeting place up the road at the Crossroads Club. I used to go in, and this guy was sitting there, the guy who's here today for one of his sponsees and his friends, and he was at my very first meeting, and the meeting was on sponsorship, and he talked about sponsorship, and he carried that message, and I left that meeting, and I found the sponsor, and he's been sober 5 years. Now, I had nothing to do with that. I planted a seed. That was God's business. So how do we carry that message? How does the group carry its message? And that's what we talk about. You know, my primary purpose is to stay sober and help another alcoholic, whether he's been around for a day, a week, a month, or a year, it really doesn't matter. Our job is to help each other, because that's how this... That's what we do. That's what I was told we would do. So I have to be careful as the individual versus the group. What AA isn't? An AA group is not a marriage, a divorce counselor. It's not a financial lending company. An AA group is not for you to get out of jail through one of us. It's not an apartment or housing agency. It's not a job finding place. Even in our own individuals, we have to be careful of what advice we give out. There are groups that get involved in those things because they want to help. And what ends up happening is they divert what our real message is. And when they start diverting that message, where somebody walking in the store will see a different message, and when they see that message, they think they can come in here to get a job. That's not what we're here for. We're here not to drink one day at a time through how to stay sober and how to live a sober life. That's what AA is about. And then they say, well, what is the message? I hear lots of different things on that. Some people say it's the steps. Some people tell you it's the fellowship. Some people tell you it's the tradition. Some tell you it's the big book. Some will tell you it's the 12 and 12. You've got all kinds of different groups and all kinds of different opinions. But it's all of it. It's not any one part of it. It's all of it is AA's message. It's the history. It's all of it. Without that message, you will, because we got so many different personalities, we won't know where to go or where we belong. So that unity is very important. So, you know, and we all have the same kind of, no matter where I go, I get the same feelings in an AA group. It may be in a different part of the country, but the feelings of Alcoholics Anonymous is always the same. It's a warm, loving place that I am safe in. And I didn't know that when I got here. That was a very hard thing for me to figure out. So on tradition five, each group is ought to be a spiritual entity having but one primary purpose, a spiritual entity. If the meeting is not in a spiritual manner, what are we doing? We're here for a spiritual solution to our problem. And our problem is alcoholism. And it's to carry the message to ourselves. So the old proverb, shoemaker stick to thy last, trite but very true for us of AA. How well we need to heed the principle that it's better to do one thing supremely well than many things badly. If we start diverting, and Bill, when he wrote Tradition 5 and Tradition 10, it was out of the experience that came from the Washingtonians and the Oxford groups and the movements before it, because they fell apart because they lost their singleness of purpose of carrying their message to the alcoholic who suffered. Because it now became plain that a recovered alcoholic can do much more for a sick alcoholic, a tremendous respectability has descended upon us all, an obligation so great that it amounts to a sacred trust. You know, I know when somebody comes to me with an issue, if I have no experience in it, and I was with, I said, a former sponsee of mine who's living up in North Carolina, many years ago he came to me, and I guess he had about 4 or 5 years, and he was saying to me, you know, I want to move in with this young lady. And I said, well, you know, you want to find out, have a healthy relationship, you ought to go find someone in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous who wasn't divorced twice and hasn't had a good relationship in recovery in the 6 years that I was here at that point. I said, you need to find a relationship sponsor. So he went out and found a man who had been married for 40 plus years and had a wonderful wife, and he learned how to have a healthy relationship with a relationship sponsor. My sponsor today has 40 plus years and he was married for 65. So I picked someone who knew how to have healthy relationships because that's what I needed. I needed to find someone with that. So we each seek something that we're looking for. So, you know, and I don't have all the answers. No one does. When somebody comes to me with a medical problem, I'm not a doctor. I will give you my experiences. I had quite a few operations since I've been here. I've been to a lot of medical things, but I will tell you that it really depends on having a good support group. For me, this is what worked for me. Having a good support group, letting everybody know exactly what I'm taking, making sure my mode is right, keeping in touch with my sponsor and three others. And because of that, I didn't have the misfortune of what a lot of people I know did, and I didn't relapse when I had to use narcotics. That's because my motive was right and I had a good support group around me. Now that's what worked for me. That could get somebody else loaded. So I have to be careful what works and what don't. My individual experience is important to me and to the people who ask me for help, but I can't tell someone who's not going to be honest what will work for them, because I don't know what's going to work for someone else. But as a group, and if you stay close to a group gives you that sense and direction that you need. And you'll seek out the right people within the group that'll help you. That is something, and our singleness of purpose is about the alcohol. I love the feelings, you know, and I hear people say, you know, somebody's animal dies, and then everybody's, you know, some people get very upset because they're talking about an animal dying in an AA meeting. Well, if it's going to make them drink, then damn it, talk about that animal dying if it's going to stop you from drinking. You know, I've learned that a long time ago, that we don't have a right to deny somebody whatever they need as long as they stay within the bounds of what our traditions say. It's not the letter of the law all the time. Sometimes it's about the spirit of the law that we got to know. And the spirit of the law is the unity and love that we get in this room. If I'm hurting, I need to talk. Sometimes I'm told I don't need to talk in a room. I have a sponsor for that. I have a support group for that. And then I can come in here and tell you how I got through that in a positive way. And maybe somebody who's struggling with something may get that solution. But as a group, we have a responsibility as a group to carry one message. And that's to help the alcoholic live a sober life without a drink. For an alcoholic not to drink, that's a miracle in itself. So, you know, temptation to do otherwise will always come to us. Seeing fine works afoot in the field of alcohol, we shall sorely be tempted to loan our name and credit of Alcoholics Anonymous to them as a movement. We shall be set to finance and endorse other causes. Should we our present success continue, many will commence to assist that AA is a brand new way of life, maybe a new religion capable of saving the world. We shall be told that our burden duty is to show modern society how it ought to live. How very attractive these projects and ideas can be. How flattering to imagine that we might be chosen to demonstrate the olden mystic promise, the first shall be last and the last shall be first. Fantastic, you say, yet some of our will wishes will begin to say such things. Fortunately, most of us are concerned that we are in a perilous speculation, alluring ingredients that is a new heady wine being offered. Each bottle marks success. We have to be careful as groups and as individuals when we start talking about how successful we are. Because ego will kill us. Pride, anger will surface again, and groups fall apart over that. A lot of groups fall apart over that. I've watched a lot of groups do that. Of this subtle vintage, may we never drink too deeply. May we never forget that we live by the grace of God. Any one of us sitting in this room is here only by one reason. God grace us to be here. I don't know how long that window of opportunity is open for anybody, least of all me. I do know that if I work towards keeping those things that were giving to me, that grace keeps coming to me. I don't know why I get it and someone else doesn't. I don't try and figure that out anymore. I believe there was a lot more people that should have been sober over me. There's a lot better people in my mind, but there's that low self-esteem and the things that the steps worked on. So as I stay here, I find out that anybody sitting in a room, God has brought us here by His grace for a specific reason. And we each have a specific reason for being here. Besides our alcohol. That's the reason that brought us in here. We find out we have a lot more problems than that. May we reflect with deepening conviction that we shall never be at our very best except when and only when our primary spiritual aim is that we are carrying the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. I don't know who is suffering out there, but if someone tells me they're suffering, I have all the time in the world for them. If you don't know and you don't tell someone you're hurting, no one can help you. You can sit in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous and be all alone. And I've done that. And I know other people have done that. But the second I ask for help, help comes. And you know, each group has a responsibility to carry that message. So if you walk in a room and see somebody new, and I've been in a couple of meetings when I was up in North Carolina, the first meeting I walked in and I said hello to everybody, because that's just what I did. Just a nice, comfortable meeting. Second meeting, I didn't say hello to anybody, and somebody walked in who knew me from the day they walked in. So we never know what message we're carrying, or as an individual, but we are responsible to carry a message to the alcoholic who suffers. I want to end with another little thing that's not AA approved, and it's called call your sponsor if you got a problem with it. Was waiting to say that for a long time. Hope I didn't lose it. The Alcoholics Anonymous, I know and love. And it really covers a lot of the traditions. The reason, and this is anonymous also. These two writings I've gotten over the years, and I just happen to like them. And this is called The Alcoholics Anonymous, I Know and Love. Alcoholics Anonymous is a bunch of drunks who can't hold their liquor and don't even try. There are no rules, dues, or fees, or anything else than any sensible organization seems to require. The speakers start on one subject and they wind up talking about something entirely different, and concludes by saying he doesn't know anything about the program except that it works. The groups are always broke, yet they always seem to have money to carry on. They are always losing members, but seeming to grow. They claim AA is a selfish program, but always seem to be doing something for others. Each group passes laws, rules, etiquettes, which everyone bitterly ignores. Members who disagree with anything are privileged to walk off in a huff, quitting forever, only to return as though nothing happened and are greeted accordingly. Nothing in AA is according to Hoyle. Nothing is ever planned 24 hours ahead, yet great projects are born and survive magnificently. Perhaps it is because we have learned to live and laugh at ourselves. God made man and woman. He made laughter too. Perhaps he is pleased with our disorganized efforts and make things right no matter who pushes the wrong button. Maybe he is pleased not with our perfection, but with our sincerity. Maybe he's pleased with our trying to be nobody but ourselves. We don't know how it works, but it does, and members keep receiving divine checks from AA investments. It's smart to be sober, and it's much easier to stay sober than to get sober. Author is anonymous. Thank you for letting me share.